Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Attack of Opportunity Live. We're taking risks. I mean, when you do a live show, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, obviously, I chat up my guest a little bit of pre-op, pre-tech before, and as our guest today knows for certain, as I do, a lot can go wrong in 15 minutes when you're supposed to be doing a show. A lot can go long in a week. First, I'd like to thank this gentleman for putting up with us. We have tried to get Max on the show for a couple of months, and every time he's ready, clears his schedule, he sits down, and he's ready to go, and we have to cancel on him. So thank you so much to all those who have been waiting to see him, and thank you to Max. Today we have, from the budding software company, the Saga Experience, Mr. Max. You know, I need you to say your last name, because I am horrible at long names. Max, thank you so much for being on the show today. You did it. I told you what would happen.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, you did say you'd have me say my last name, so I jumped it. But I'm Max Bielinski, and as Jeff mentioned, I'm one of the founders of the Saga Experience, which we'll tell you more about shortly.
So, the very first question that you know is coming your way is, let's go back in time. When did you first know you were a geek, a nerd, one of us, one of us?
Oh, my goodness. So, this dates back probably roughly middle school, and I'm going to say middle school specifically for the tabletop geeking. I grew up, discovered I liked chess at a very young age, younger than that. And one night, as apparently happens, my mother dropped me off at the little shack at the bottom of the in-town sort of ski center. I grew up in Colorado, and she dropped me off on the wrong night. And because it was the early 90s, you couldn't just call her up. And I walked in, and it was, instead of the kids' chess group, it was the adult chess group. And I walked in, and I got destroyed. But I had so much fun. And so that was sort of the start of the geeky and board game experience. And then through middle school, became very intense about chess, but also met some friends who introduced me to things like Dungeons & Dragons and Magic the Gathering and some other games. It just sort of never really stopped. So, yeah.
Hey, there's an old saying that I still swear by today. If you want to get better at something, go up against someone better than yourself.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah.
You know, whether it's a game or a sport or, you know, even this, though it would be kind of like, you know, study the pros and try to learn from them. So, you mentioned chess and then suddenly into a TTRPG. So how long have you been playing RPGs? Well, is there a story that of discovery? Was there a gateway drug let you in?
Yeah, so I don't really know much about gateway. I always sort of liked the tactical aspect of chess and sort of the control. And I met a friend in middle school who said, "Have you ever tried Dungeons and Dragons?" And their family actually had a game. Father would dungeon master, and they would sort of all sit around occasionally, and so that was sort of how I got involved. And we used to actually go backpacking, and we would, as some of the younger ones, we'd sometimes go out on the day hikes, and sometimes we would stay back in the tents and play games. And that was sort of the introduction. And then through middle school and high school, I met some other like-minded geeks, and we created our own worlds and our own stories, and just had a great time. And so, yeah, it appealed to me both on this sort of fantastical level, but also the analyst in my head really liked the idea of, that doesn't quite work right. How can we make that work better? And so we started coming up with, you know, homebrew campaigns, homebrew rules, and all of that sort of stuff as well.
So far, you're telling a tale that resonates with so many us and our geeky dear hearts of getting into. And usually from this point, whether it's a music creator, an artist, someone that ends up podcasting, people that end up doing live theater, writers I've interviewed as well, even cosplayers. I got to say, I've only ever interviewed one person that was actually creating software, but you're looking at creating something unique. And again, but we're, you know, to whet the appetite. One last question before we dive into that. Why not take your hobby and do something you love and put it online and share with people, and you play to your strengths? What made you decide to start developing software that you could put online so people could use it to play their favorite hobby. Do you have a background in, like, you talk about your analytical mind, do you have a background in it? Or was there always a goal of like, I need to learn this programming if I'm going to, you know, make the dream of making this software? Like, what came first? I get, you know, is it a chicken and egg kind of thing?
Yeah, so as with the chicken and egg thing, it kind of goes a little bit both ways, right? I do have an analytical background. I worked for a financial institution in New York for a few years. I'm also a recovering attorney, which I like to tell people. As an attorney, I worked on reforming legal processes, and specifically how can we use technology in courts, right? So I've worked very closely with computer programmers off and on for a number of years. I have a fair amount of programming experience, mostly in the data analytics realm, but I don't have experience in game development. So I had this sort of background and I knew a lot of people, but I didn't know necessarily that this was going to become a huge tech-heavy project. What I did know is I wanted to enable people to use a large amount of data very easily to tell the stories that they wanted to tell. And I don't want this project to be me imposing my story on somebody else, right? I want to bring the community together. And so, I mean, we'll talk a lot more about features later, but whenever we have a database, our goal is that community members can add to that database, right? And make the Saga experience bigger and bigger, and a better experience that fits more what they want so that they don't have to resort to homebrewing, hopefully as much. I mean, I'm sure it'll always be there, but we'd like people to be able to tailor their own system. So my collaborator and I had the idea for this initially, I guess a little over 2 years ago. We were looking at running a remote game, as many people are. And we found that the tools that were out there just didn't quite do what we wanted. They weren't quite as immersive as we'd want. It pulled us out of the game and out of the story.
So what tools are you referring to? Let's rip off the Band-Aid. Before you reveal like what it is you're working on, what reference of internet? Because I've vaguely mentioned stuff and people like have no idea I was speaking of Roll20, Fantasy Grounds, or Arcane Forge. Is that the sort of group we're talking about here?
Yeah, so we're definitely talking about Roll20. We're talking about just making a Discord channel or a Zoom or a Google Hangout. And having some dice roll apps. We're talking about Fantasy Grounds. We had also looked at using like Neverwinter Nights, right? And could we do some sort of a remote network, you know, use a VPN and just like use a level creator. And we looked at that, and that in a lot of ways was a little better, but it was so much work up front, and that wasn't really satisfying to us.
So, for those that don't know, Neverwinter Nights was one of the first video games that were released that had a DM's toolbox, that had a programming toolbox that a player that bought the discs and everything could flip the switch and get a behind-the-scenes look and play around with, like you said, making their own levels, making their own content to make the game go on. And this was revolutionary at the time. And that's something that you considered for your own software. So I really don't want to pin you down, because from what I think you're baking here is something kind of original. It encompasses a lot of other platforms, but in itself should be somewhat original. I mean, that's what we're hoping for. I mean, you did promise me some beta keys, and I might hold you to that in the future. Now, sure. I love our sponsors that give us free stuff that we can go, yay, thank you, sponsor, and we're playing on their system, or, you know, that kind of thing, of course. But when you first reached out to us and talked about the Saga experience in an email, I was very impressed. I was very intrigued, because it was obvious that you were very excited, that you were very devoted to this project, that it will still take months to even to get to a beta stage. Mm-hmm. But I got to start witnessing and start a rapport with you while you're still at the ground level. All the lawyer, all the bureaucrat, all the money, all the nitpicking stuff is already decided. I get in at the meat and potatoes where you're actually starting to develop. I've seen some of your little videos where you're doing the wire mesh and you're doing the layovers and the structure of people. And it so obviously not a finished product, but, you know, a ways to go. Could you tell me, is there an idea behind the software or a focus that you're drawing most of everything else from? What's the original thing? What does it have that no one else has? Or what does it do differently that a lot of other software is doing one way and you guys decided to flip it around and just, you know, even a subtle difference can make quite a difference.
So I think the biggest thing is I like to talk about our sort of two design pillars, right? And the first of those is a virtual tabletop. that's something that Roll20 and Fantasy Grounds, right, they're big players in the space. There are a lot of new players coming into that space, and a lot of them do it quite well, right? There are obviously going to be things that one system tweaks and it works better for some people, worse for others. That's fine. And we thought about maybe going that way. But one, as I just said, like a lot of people are already doing that, and they're already doing it pretty well. And what really excites us is the ability to sort of take a step back, right? All of those systems look at the tabletop, and they're called virtual tabletops for a reason, right? They look at the tabletop and they say, how can we do this far away from each other? What we've said, and our sort of central crux, is that as long as we're doing it far away, we know we're going to use a computer. We know we're going to use some software. And as long as we're going to use some software, why not use that software to its fullest extent, right? So there are a lot of different ways we could do this, right? We've got a lot of processing power. A lot of virtual tabletops give you this, like, they give you a facsimile of what you would experience in person, but you don't have the personal connection, and you don't really have the immersion that you might have in the story. So what we wanted to do is say, okay, let's re-examine how some of these systems work, right? Maybe we want to deconstruct a combat round or a stealth round in something we call encounter mode, right? It's no longer person one, person two, person three, person one, person two, person three. Now it opens up the possibility of taking half a round. It opens up the possibility that what I see is not what you see, Jeff, right? Because we can see from our character's perspective, which is something we've done in a lot of our sort of experiment videos, and we think increases immersion quite a bit. What we haven't done is gone deep into the realm of animation, right? And that's by design. Because as soon as we start animating everything, that's what it is, right? And we're going to have a limited number of attacks, sword slashes, ways of sneaking, whatever it may be, and it takes away from some of the storytelling. So we're trying to represent where all the characters in this story are, and have the computer take care of all the computational stuff, all the skill checks, all the combat, all of the stealth and measuring distances between places, so that you don't have to, right? We don't want to make you an accountant to your character. We just want you to say, this is what my character should do. Let's see if it works, which is, I think, sort of the gold standard. I remember dating back to middle school of, hey, let's try these role-playing games. You can try anything you want. You're not sure if it's going to work, which in a large way, I guess, is sort of an analog for this whole project.
So to delve a little deeper, we talked about seeing what somebody else sees. Let me just paint a picture to help you with the selling point.
Sure.
The classic game, you have your guys and gals around a big table. Now, there's a grid on this table. The DM has, you know, Sharpied or penciled out in washable markers, this type of thing. Everyone sees what's on the grid. Now, he can reveal stuff, but a reveal to one person is pretty much a reveal to the whole table. Now, what if you got a dwarf that can see 60 feet in the dark, but everyone's trucking along with your 20-foot torch, right? So you're revealing stuff going, hey, dwarven character, you know, you see this, and everyone hears you talking to tell him. With software and people in their own living rooms and at homes, right, despite everyone, you know, listening to each other, that dwarf with your software and certain lighting effects, and you can do this also in Roll20 and stuff, but I'm hoping a lot from you, where his range of vision would be extended compared to someone else, what you're getting at, like lighting effects and stuff, or they might notice something, and you could outline a secret door to a player, and then you literally have a legit someone coming over the speaker going, hey man, do you see that? What? Says everybody. And he's standing in front of a wall going, how can you not see this secret door? Says the elf. Or, you know, oh, something's coming. You know, or the dwarf just charges off and like, dude, what are you doing? Why are you zerging? He's like, oh, don't you see the thing, right? Much more immersion that way than to have the dwarf go, what do I see? The DM goes, you see this? And everyone suddenly reacts to the dwarf assuming, oh, well, the dwarf told me, right? In detail. You know, and we all act instantaneously. And I think that's like one of the coolest things that you can do online with software that you cannot do effectively. Don't get me wrong. I love around table chemistry. But, you know, if there's one thing that, you know, the video virtual aspect can give you is the solidarity, the separation of each person's personal experience. And it sounds like you are hitting that marker pretty hard.
We're definitely trying to, right? So we don't think that we can compete with the around the table solidarity. And a lot of software is trying to do that, but we want to create the community around the story rather than around the table. And so you gave a lot of great examples with lighting, right? And I think those are excellent. Another area I'm really excited to show in upcoming months about this is stealth, right? Stealth has always, there are a lot of exciting stories where you have to sneak by something, right? We can think back to Lord of the Rings, right? Frodo and Sam are sneaking into Mordor, and yes, there's some combat, but the majority of the time they're trying to sneak around things. Because of all the locational pinning and the light and the sound cues, right? We can also work in sound cues, similar to the light cues that you mentioned. We can have a much more involved stealth game slash story than you could around a table, right? Because if your character doesn't see something, you don't see it, right? This is similar to your secret door example, but that secret door could be an enemy. It could be a trap. It could be whatever it might be.
Oh, now you got me seriously excited because I love the video game, the Thief series, Dishonored 1 and 2, that whole, you know, get by without being seen, you know, that kind of thing, like, the, you know, utilizing stealth of a party. That sounds very, very cool.
And the goal here is really not to make this just a combat tabletop game. I mean, we've all been there. I think, you know, we different people want different things out of a tabletop role-playing game. Some people do a little role-playing and they jump in and they have a tabletop war game. And that's great if that's what you want. And we certainly want to enable that. But we also want to open the door for other types of games. For example, things focusing on stealth. And so we're working pretty heavily on that system. As well as a bunch of sort of locational things so that people don't just stand toe-to-toe, right? Create incentives for movement and systems that that allow you to say, move other characters, right? If I run into you and push you, what does that do, right? And that's relatively easy to calculate with a physics system that is used in most video game development, but it's much harder to flip to page 276 of your third book of the role-playing game or whatever, and consult that rule and then immediately consult another rule, right? And it takes a lot more time.
Do you sell shares that we can buy into your company? And when you take off like Zoom, you know, get rich alongside you? Because it sounds like whether this takes a year or five, it's, you know, the quality is going to be worth the product and the weight. So
I mean, that's really our hope, right?
Yeah, yeah. So let's tone this down a bit and focus on you. A couple of personal questions. While you were playing tabletop games and stuff, do you have a favorite trope, a favorite class or race or alignment that you always like to play?
I don't know that I have a favorite that super stands out. I have been enjoying the sort of cooperative evil wannabe mastermind. And I think that's sort of my,
you like the DM.
I'm not sort of, well, but not necessarily the DM, right? Like, I like to have something a little hidden from the other characters, right? And I guess this is not one character type, but I want to have a reason to cooperate because I don't want to derail the thing, but I want to have some big overarching goal that I'm going to achieve that the other people can't know, but it's, as long as I become the hero, then I can take over the town and then I can be, ha-ha, it's my town, whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah. No,
clearly like, in terrible voice acting, just like that.
No, mysteries or, you know, like somebody they thought was a bit off and they kept watching and had no idea how far reaching your plans in the campaign.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. He was kind of a twerpy but helpful guy and now look, right? So I think something along those lines.
So is this your first software project that you plan on going commercial with? Do you have anything else, something that led to this?
This is the first software project that I've worked on in this field that I intend to go commercial with. I've been involved in a few other things, as I mentioned earlier in the interview, legal technology in courts and a little bit of fintech, more than a decade ago. So, it's certainly the first development, first foray into this subfield. But we're really excited. So
you are episode 88, and recently I found a brand new question that I love asking, and I keep forgetting to prep my guests. So I'll sort of stick this with you because it really is putting you on the spot. Can you recall a happy accident that might have helped or pushed things along, or a random occurrence, or, you know, something favorable, sign from the gods, you know, something somebody said, something did, or something, you know, that just happened quite by accident that just lands in your lap and you go, oh, this is, yeah, here we go. We're going to go this way with something with this project or, you know,
Are you talking development or circumstance around the project? Because I think there's anything. A pretty obvious one that I can point
to. Your collaborator, you might have met him quite by chance, and now here the tour you're making this awesome project might be an example. Do you have a story to tell about something where you were going one direction and you hit a brick wall and just by accident you did something and went, oh, wow, look at this, and off you go? Like, I'm just again, sorry for putting you on the spot,
yeah.
But I was just curious.
So, I mean, the most obvious one that comes to mind is, of course, the current pandemic that we're all going through, right? And we're finding more and more time inside. And so part of that has changed the motivation for this project quite a bit. We went from looking at a way for one friend and I to play from Virginia to Washington State to actually him coming out to Virginia to work with me. We've spent a whole lot more time on it than we otherwise might. This originally kind of started off as a side project. It was moving forward, but not nearly as quickly. And for the past 6 months, we've just been tearing through it, you know, developmentally. I know that's not as an exciting.
No, you're doing the best.
The
best you can do with what you got. Like a lot of people that have to do the 9 to 5 and they're at home, they're going, crap, what can I do? Someone that's developing something on a computer or whatever, it's like, well, you're making the best of the time because of circumstance. There's no shame in that, it's actually been
great. So I have a young child as well. And it means that I've spent a lot more time. I'm basically either developing or watching him basically the whole time right now. And it's a huge lifestyle change for me. But I've also got to spend a whole lot more time with him. So selfishly, all the terrible events of 2020 have been less terrible for me. From a development standpoint, I mean, we're always finding sort of happy accidents, especially I think it's part of working with a collaborator where I'll wire something up and then, you know, I'll pass the project off. We tend to sort of sign in and sign off and pass the project back and forth. And sometimes we'll have miscommunication and we'll say, oh, shoot, I totally messed up that piece of code. But now look what happens, right? The person, you know, is obscured by fog. I wonder if that could be helpful. Maybe we should keep that effect, right? So
yeah, okay.
It's not a terribly exciting story, but stuff like that is happening all the time.
I feel you.
And while we do have a grand laid out plan, we're trying to keep ourselves pretty scalable, pretty modular, pretty adaptable. And a big part of doing talks like this is building our community early before all the development is done, because we're a team of two currently, but we know that there are a lot of things that people want out of a software like this. And we want to make sure that we get a lot of those voices, right? And so we want an active community, not to say we're going to take every suggestion that people throw out there. But if there's something people consistently say, oh, I really need this for clarity or to increase the immersiveness of the game, particularly when we get into an alpha or beta, that's absolutely something that we want to be involved with the community, because really it's all about the people. It's about the people and their stories.
Cool. Well, I'm certainly excited about the software, and I intend to, you know, hype it as much as I can during and after the interview and take this interview so, you know, like it gets in front of more eyes, yeah. That kind of thing. So where can we find you online? I know you have a Discord server, Twitter account, Facebook account, something, sneak peeks. Where can they find you online?
I think probably the biggest membership thing is either we've got a Facebook group under Saga Experience. And I can give you all of these links that you can put up for people.
Yeah, check the bio. When the video hits, it might even take a week, but you do eventually get all the links, you know, in the descriptions of the pod as well as the video aspect. Don't worry about that.
We have a Discord channel. We'd love to see you there. Chat about ideas on world building, game design, Saga Experience, obviously. Facebook group. We have a Twitter. We're slowly growing it. Actually, I'd never Twittered before our initial talk. So Twitter is still in its infancy. We do have a website as well, which we'll link below. And we have a YouTube channel where we post a bunch of sneak previews, either speed builds that we do in our editor, which allows you to build live. So, you know, I can put a wall up in the middle of a session or take it down or delete part of it to show a secret door or whatever, a bunch of wireframes. And we also show different ways of characters interacting with the environment, climbing, destroying environments, building on the fly, things like that. So, I'll send you a big bunch of all those links, but I would love for people to find us online and just sort of keep tabs, because we're working hard and we're really excited about this. But obviously, it's going to take a lot of people to really make this keep going. And our goal is just to work on this as long as we can. I mean, we don't have any other plans for, you know, 3 months from now. That's it. We're done. You know, as long as we can afford to keep doing this and have an audience, then we keep producing.
One thing I really liked as soon as you handed over was your logo. I'm just going to make this really big here. If you look carefully, it's all zeros and ones, like binary code, which is like the background for the Saga experience. I'm looking at, for the podcasting audience, I'm looking at a black and white wall of zeros and ones. And in front of it is a round tipped triangle that's white, but it looks marbled a bit. Not dirty, but marbled a bit, so it gives a soft feeling of stone. There's a hole in the center, and stuck backwards to front and front to back is a pen and a quill, and then coming out of the center to one side, it's a Saga experience. And I don't know if we get like a rainbow beam. What is that jutting from one?
So that's the Earth's horizon.
Oh, right? Okay.
And, the pen and the quill symbolize that we're telling stories, but we're really trying to make the system setting agnostic, right? Okay. A lot of people play fantasy tabletop games, but we also want this to be eligible for sci-fi, right? That's the binary. Or, you know, if you want to do a modern or a Western or whatever. So we've got the pen. The triangle, we've got the seeing stone, right? You might remember from your old Ouija board, if you have a Ouija board.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I gotcha.
That's the triangle. Stylized a bit, but really the idea is that this is all about the story. And I don't know if my collaborator would love or hate that I say, if you're a real geek and you have a lot of free time, read the binary. But it's not just a random pattern of letters. There's an Easter egg there that he's super proud of. So again, he might hate me that I give away his Easter egg, but I won't tell you what it is. I'll just tell you that
it's fine, but it's hard to see. Now, let me show you something. Unfortunately, I can't describe. I'm going to put up an Earth shot behind me for those that are listening in the audio aspect of poof. Look, Earth horizon, right?
Yeah.
So if you look again carefully at the Saga Experience logo arcing down, I realize now that the wall of binary is actually like floating in space, and that Earth horizon, it's like this whole logo is in orbit. That's like a whole other level of coolness to this logo. It just gets better and better the more I look at this thing.
Yeah, Adam does some great work. So shout out to my collaborator, Adam Lutz.
So credit where credit is due. Tell us a little bit about Adam. Nothing embarrassing, obviously. Yeah, we really want to hear. Sorry. Were you guys always friends? Did you guys one come to the other? Was it just something kicking around? Like, I'm not trying to solidify, oh, it was one person's idea.
Sure.
No. But I was just curious, like you said, you're collaborating in software, and you talked about his artistic background. That's hence he did the, you know, the Saga and everything. Mm-hmm. And obviously you can't pull this off without him. And if not, even more people eventually, the more you dig in, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're definitely looking to create some partnerships with additional people. As we get some more funding, I think our staff will grow slightly, but, that's a story for another day. So Adam and I actually met in middle school, in a town in Northeastern Oregon. And his family, a bunch of brothers, they all play D&D together, and they sort of invited me in. And so Adam and I have been friends since, I don't know, 96? I'm going to say 96. Sounds about right. So it's been a long time, and we've been very good friends for a number of years. He was one of the groomsmen at my wedding. But we've lived in very different places for almost the entirety of our adult life. We've both lived abroad a little bit. We've both lived in different cities. But until the last year, we hadn't lived within 3,000 miles of each other. I think that's safe to say. He was mostly West Coast. I was mostly East. He spent some time in Germany. I spent some time in Australia, but really just not at all close. So we hadn't actually played many games together, and talking about, man, I really missed that. And remember all the great inside jokes we had and the stories we can tell. And we still tell jokes about, you know, things that happened in a fantasy world when we were both 16. I guess we weren't both 16 because of your old, but you get the point.
Yeah, no, that's great.
So we both still do that, and we said, hey, wouldn't this be great? And then I started talking with some other people, and he started talking with some other people, and we started, you know, how would we play this game or a new game? And we started looking at the options, and as I said, we weren't super happy, and we wanted to something a little more story immersive. And it was sort of a collaboration with more than just the two of us, but the two of us are the ones that are working full-time on this now. So it's really exciting. We're thrilled to have him. he's sort of come out here and joined the team in a bit of a transition for him, which is a bold move and exciting. And of course, the times don't get much more exciting than this. So we're thrilled to have him. And he makes amazing logos and lots of other stuff that, you know, we'll keep showing through YouTube videos or websites and whatever.
Taking a page from a certain guy that decided to drill a hole in a ground and came out with a hat that said The Boring Company. And then he sold flamethrowers. Come on, you know I'm talking about Elon Musk. Is there merchandise for this awesome logo? Because I want to buy it on T-shirt like yesterday.
Yeah,
can we help fund the project by at least buying cool merch, which doubles as advertising? I mean, that sounds fun.
Absolutely. So merch is all in progress. We have prototypes of a bunch of merch. There will be options from probably some T-shirts, certainly stickers. We're doing leather patches with a leather engraved binary and the whole logo that you see. We'll have a bunch of things. We also might do some metal etching. We've been talking about Adam has a close friend who does a bunch of laser metal engraving, so you might even be able to get, you know, cool belt buckles if that's your thing, or pins. Oh, yeah. Or whatever. So we're still experimenting on what that is and what our shipping costs are and what actual margins are. But we'd love to get merch out pretty soon. We'd love for you to wear it or slap a patch on your backpack or a sticker on your guitar case or whatever it may be. And we're hoping to have that up in the next, I'll say month or two. And then hopefully, if this airs pretty soon, yeah, hopefully it doesn't become too long. But that's certainly a goal. And we have a Kickstarter in the works. We're not quite at the, we want a little more feedback from individuals, and, you know, sending out, even if it's glitchy, usable alpha, which is certainly when we'll reach back out to you, about testing and running at least a one shot with this and seeing all the things we did great and lots of things we didn't do so great, I'm sure.
Yeah. But for someone to get in on the infancy stage, like, we're not even talking about alpha. Like, usually alpha is like, what? Oh, well, I played the beta. Like, this is a really cool chance for the community to hook up with you and give you feedback and be part of the Saga experience. I mean, how cool would it be that, like, you know, 5 years from now we're using the software and it's just like, oh yes, Max and I go way back. I helped to develop the software.
It'd be great. Another little plug that I want to say is, because this is digital, I guess there are two points that we haven't touched on that I would feel remiss in not mentioning at some point during this interview.
Sure.
One is because this is all a digital system. Our hope is that it will interface very well with streaming, right? So as more and more tabletop role-playing games become sources of entertainment, not only for those playing, but for those watching or listening, if it's already on the computer, you don't have to have a big setup with a lot of cameras and everything else, right? So streaming has some big options that we see further down the line. It'll be a while. And the second thing is, we want to do community implemented sort of a marketplace trade, right? So if there's another model you want for characters, we're trying to make all of our databases, for lack of a better term, I'll say moddable. I mean, it won't really be programming, but at least initially it won't just be plugging new things in. But if you can put another miniature into the database, you can have another sort of character, right? If you can put another weapon in the database, you can equip it. If you put another setting in the database, it's there, right? And we're spending so much time on development that one thing we haven't particularly done is create a single setting for Saga experience, right? If you look at Dungeons and Dragons, they have their, well, they've got several, but you can talk about Forgotten Realms or Eberron or whatever. If you look at Pathfinder, they've got Galaran, right? Which I'm probably pronouncing poorly, now everybody can flame in comments. But a lot of these have campaign settings. And one thing we would really like to do as we get closer is partner with a bunch of creative people, because we know there are a lot of really good storytellers out there, and sort of have them create a couple of default settings for us. Because creating a system from scratch is a lot of work, but creating a game and a story from scratch is also a lot of work. And so there are a lot of people out there that we know want this sort of base, here's the world, here are some adventure hooks that I could do. And so that the narrator, as we call the person who runs the game and the story, so they don't have to create everything. So we'd really be interested in partnering with some community members on that basis as well, as we move forward.
I love your energy. I got to say, like, I've had few guests that are more ramped up than myself that I just hit them with one little question and off they go, because I'm known for barreling over on the mic and a tangent. Your devotion that comes through, your passion and your energy, is really something. I want to thank Max Belinsky personally for taking the time after such a long time of trying to get on the show. And we've been discussing not only his personal geekiness, but the up-and-coming Saga Experience software that I can't wait to see. I would like to be a part of this. And we will, you know, we'll have my people call your people.
Sounds great. I'll have my 10 months time answer the phone. Yeah.
Awesome. Check the link below. And as links come out, as this Kickstarter, you know, check back, as, you know, as the news unfolds, we will post those links in all the bios, podcast software, anywhere you listen to your podcasts, and here up on YouTube and our live stream that's going out right now on a Monday night. Thank you all, and we will see you next time.
All right. Thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
Thank you, sir. On Attack of Opportunity.